the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, we're coming back at you today with another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. As always, I have Dr. Jason Bond with me, and today we've got one esteemed pathologist, Dr. Tom Allen, who's going to answer all the questions and tell y'all why your soybeans have bad quality. So, Tom, welcome to the studio.
That's a pretty big, tall order.
You can do it, dude.
You're a tall, bald pathologist, brother.
You can do it.
I don't know that I can do that.
I believe you can.
Tom's like our first four-peat.
Four-peat. He's a Chicago Bull then, huh?
Yeah, dude, people are not going to know what you're talking about.
No, they're not. That's
people of a certain age will know what I'm
talking
era.
About.
Well, you know, Tom grew up in Indiana, and that's close to Illinois. So.
No, I didn't do all of
They play basketball in Indiana, right?
They do. Larry Bird was from Indiana State, right?
That's correct.
Okay, that's an interesting introduction to the podcast.
You're the one that said four-peat.
I did say four-peat.
But to this seed quality aspect, it appears to be a problem all over the United States, not just in the Delta. I know you got contacts all over.
This has been a big topic of conversation across the entire United States, all the way from Wisconsin south to where we are, and even into Louisiana as well.
Interesting.
Which,
so,
honestly, I think in years past, and last year, Arkansas had an issue. 08, 09, we definitely had an issue in this part of the world. So I think anything further north that's being experienced by the farmers as well as university entities, that's something new for that group up there.
So when we talk about seed quality, you always think about those early beans getting hit the hardest and some of the late escape. But, you know, I was talking to a guy the other day that said he hit bad quality, then he got back into good quality. What coincides with, okay, these beans are going to be bad quality? I know it's weather, but is it like a specific growth stage or anything where they're more vulnerable to that wet weather?
I could give you a perplexed gaze, but I don't think that'll follow through on the podcast.
Oh, I can vouch for it.
Unfortunately.
Perplexed is a good description of the look on Tom's face.
I think that's the question that we even have as plant pathologists and anybody that deals with soybean seed quality is exactly what component really addresses all of that. Because, yes, weather plays a huge role. Delayed harvest plays a huge role. And how those come together definitely impact the situation.
So another thing to put in there that may come together in this is, how does soybean desiccation play into seed quality? Because we really have only been desiccating soybeans, what, about 10 years, Jason? 12 years, somewhere in there? Maybe it's been 18 years. Yeah, it's 2018. We started in early 2000, didn't we? Time flies.
I don't have any.
But is having that bean dried down, sitting there ready to go, and, oh, we just can't get to it, does that play a role in it?
That could play a role in that situation if you end up with weather that allows the pods to become wet and then dry. And I realize making that statement, then you start to wrap your head around, well, what about a really, really heavy dew? Does that factor into a situation where the pods remain, quote, unquote, wet?
Well, wet and dry is very subjective, and you live in a Mississippi Delta. So any given day can be wet till 10 o'clock and then dry thereafter.
That's right.
Tom, I have pretty clear memory of 2009 and what everybody faced that year. What we've done so far in 2018, is it better or worse than 2009?
I don't think it's near as bad as 2009.
Okay.
And that's, I think the damage reports, as I understand it, are probably more widespread than 2009. But I don't think that the damage is as catastrophic as it appeared to be that year.
Because we definitely had some beans left in the field that year.
We had a lot of soybeans that were left in the field that year. But I think I should add, it's probably different to the south, because I know that Trey Price indicated they had somebody probably was going to plan on bush hogging between 300 and 600 acres.
And that's in Louisiana.
That was in Louisiana, yeah, because the damage was so bad.
There's a host of factors going on in Louisiana right now that guys are electing to make them leave beans in the field versus get other things out. And the further south you go, I think the further worse it gets with what you're talking about in Louisiana. But what I'm hearing a lot of, and I heard this morning, is, yeah, I'm clipping along, cutting a field, and I'm 3% damage, and then bang, I'm 27%. So,
wow. And I say wow because I could dive off into the deep end, because there's I don't want to cover that topic on what I think goes on at the elevator.
Yeah, that makes sense, Tom. I mean, I think, you know.
And I know enough about this to be a little dangerous, but the grading component is subjective, and beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's a subjective evaluation of a random sample that comes out of a truck.
That's right.
It depends on where that probe goes in.
That's right.
That's exactly right. And that's a difficult topic to, A, discuss, and, B, I think it's even harder for some people to consider, because I think that's one of those topics that people start to get not only frustrated, but slightly irate about. And that's where you get the questions where somebody says, well, I took my truck to point A, and they came back with this percent damage, and I drove the truck somewhere else, and they come back with this percent damage.
Well, we do the same thing, because obviously weed science is, I mean, we do a lot of subjective ratings of weed control. I mean, we work on a percent scale, and, you know, my 90% may be your 75%, and that's not right or wrong. It's just different. It's the way I perceive it versus the way you perceive it. And what I tell, you know, folks that come to work for us, as long as, you know, if I'm 90 and you're 75, as long as you're 75 tomorrow and I'm 90 tomorrow, then it's okay. You know, it's relative. But if we flip-flop, you know, then there's, you know, a problem that we got to address. So,
and we address the same thing in plant pathology. You get a lot of people that question, well, why don't you evaluate your plots on a 0 to 100 scale? And typically what I suggest to them is, all you're doing is scaling which product is the best performer versus which product is the least best performer. I won't say the worst. And that differs not only within your test area, but that can differ across a field, which makes it really, really difficult. And that's part of why evaluating things from a blind standpoint is the only way to go. So you don't know what treatments you're looking at. You're just looking at a treated plot.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, the fact that you get one number from you know, one location and a different number from another location, you know, elevator.
Well, and that doesn't mean that somebody evaluated those differently. That could mean they put the probe in a different part
exactly.
of the truck. And there are always climate differences between parts of fields, front to back, side to side, low spot to high spot. You can have subtle inherent differences, which in some cases could be related to date that particular soybean plant or group of plants within that area reached physiological maturity, and how that affects or impacts quality is certainly something that I think is a difficult principle to wrap your mind around, because there's a lot involved in that particular scenario.
All right, so you're talking about environment, climate differences in the field. Did he say climate? Did I just make that word up?
Environment and climate are the same thing, boss.
I know, but didn't he say climate?
I did say climate, and I really probably should have said microclimate.
Okay.
Or climate within a small area.
Well, good enough. I was just making sure my ears didn't hear something you didn't say. But the planting date, Tom, the fact that we had a majority of our crop planted in a relatively short window, did that contribute to what we've seen this fall, given that, it, you know, a lot of it matured at about the same time, you know, it was ready to harvest at about the same time, and now we are where we are?
Yes, because I think if you look at some soybean fields that may have been planted 3 to 4 weeks later or even a little later than that, soybean quality is not near as poor as what it is that it appears to be based on some of those soybean fields that may have been planted like mid to not quite the end of April.
All right, Tom. So we talk about soybean quality and getting docked for soybean quality and microsites in the field. We've talked a lot about that. What specific diseases are influencing the soybean quality?
Probably the two biggest, and really let's just, yeah, we'll focus on the two biggest. Purple seed stain is certainly one of those that discolors the actual soybean kernel itself. And that then becomes a graded evaluation because it's a soybean of another color. The other factor or other disease or organism that would tend to do that would be Phomopsis seed decay. And Phomopsis is the one that I think a lot of times people point the finger at that one being the most detrimental, but not everything I've observed, at least in the plots that we've looked at seed quality in, has been attributed to Phomopsis seed decay. And those would be any soybean kernels that would look mummified or white, and in some cases they can also be shriveled. So you will not have the purple discoloration, but you will have what appears to be a white fungal growth on that actual kernel itself.
Is a soybean a kernel?
I was wondering the exact same thing as I was saying that.
I think a bean is a bean, and a kernel is a kernel, and I think you're wrong, Tom, but we know what you mean.
That's a good question.
That is a good question.
When you say corn kernel, but technically a kernel, I mean a corn kernel.
Kernel comes off a cob, not out of a pod.
Yeah, but you say soybean grain because it's a soybean. It's not a grain. Grain would be a whole.
Come to think of it, what has a kernel besides corn? Kernel
wheat.
Of?
Wheat kernels. No, it's a technically wheat berries.
That's true, technically. That's a good point.
I don't know.
Well, guys, if y'all are listening and you know the truth, call us.
Yeah, Tom had good intentions.
Really good intentions, because the only reason I used the word kernel was to separate and state that I'm talking about a single grain, one.
Okay, so.
One soybean.
One soybean, and soybean doesn't have a plural. It's because you can't say soybeans.
That's right.
But anyway, back to the purple seed stain. I've always had this question about purple seed stain. We're not selling soybeans for human consumption. So does the purple seed stain really matter if we're crushing for oil and meal, or does it change the protein and oil characteristics, Tom?
I can't answer that one way or another.
You can't answer any of my questions.
No, I honestly can't remember. I can't remember why that's an issue. Well, and some of the...
But, I mean, you get where I'm coming from, right?
Oh, no, I totally get where you're coming from. I get where you're asking at, because then if you add to the whole purple seed stain and Phomopsis seed decay, what we've looked at harvesting some plots this year have been soybean of additional coloration, black, pink, kind of reddish, brown. There's all sorts of other colors that we've seen that would indicate you've either had some secondary organisms come on to some of those that may have been initially infected by something else, or, and this is probably more what I suspect, you have a complex of disease-causing or pathogenic organisms that result in an overall component of seed decay. And this has always been the question post-2009. What are we trying to manage? Because if you're trying to manage a complex of organisms, that's not an easy situation to get into.
Because there's different modes of action that work on different things, correct?
If we were talking about attempting to manage those with a fungicide. And something that I think we hadn't really factored in much to this, and it's only because I think in some years...
But when this Phomopsis, purple seed stain, all this comes in, the crop's made and all of your inputs are out there, correct?
Correct. So that's typically infection that occurs we've not necessarily puts would have been made. And when those organisms are present and the environment at the period of time where you're having pod fill and how that specifically influences the seed decay complex, I think, is a difficult paradigm to consider because it's multiple aspects that come together and how manage that. Because
I'm not even sure I know what paradigm
That's
is.
What I was going to say. You're going to have to define that word for me.
I'd have to look that up.
On a lighter note, there doesn't seem to be a lot of agreement on the internet about the difference between a seed and a kernel.
So you used Google, right?
Yeah, just throwing that out there. So
maybe Tom was right?
Well, you weren't entirely wrong. So.
Wrap us back to what you learned since 2009 and 2018 about soybean seed diseases.
We'll definitely talk about 2009. That was one of those years we had a pretty large project that the Soybean Promotion Board had funded, and there were a fair enough working on this from the agronomic side, the entomological side, plant pathology as well, and essentially tried to determine, can we manage or reduce the seed decay that might occur through adding additional inputs, which in those trials were mostly fungicide plus insecticide or those alone at multiple application timings. And really, the best take-home message was you can put on as much fungicide as you need to in four different applications and still not reduce appreciable overall losses associated with the seed decay complex, which I think is one of those situations that ever since 2009, people have asked, well, if I make a later application, what if I forego the R3, R4 fungicide application and put something on at R5 or R6? We did that work in 2009. It was not beneficial when it came to reducing seed quality losses in that situation. Now, if you fast forward to 2018, some of the work that we've done this year, and when I say this year, I mean the last few weeks, we had an opportunity to go out and kind of look at varietal differences as to how those may equate into overall seed quality by scrapping one row off of an OVT in Stoneville. Did the whole thing. So that would have been like 133 varieties. And suffice to say that there are tremendous differences between varieties when it comes to the whole seed quality situation, which I think when we started cutting those plots, we looked at the plot map and said, well, let's cut the first, you know, 8 or 10 and see if there are any differences on the evaluation sheet, and we'll go from there. And by the time we got done with the first pass, I think we decided, well, let's keep going because there's so many differences out here. Let's see how that really shakes out when we put it in the computer and run some overall analysis on that. And that was just to give quick snapshot, 1 year, one location, just to get an idea of what those differences may be and at least provide some information, because it's certainly something that creates a tremendous amount of frustration this time of the year.
All right, so variety differences, and then you mentioned that fungicides doesn't seem to, you know, timing doesn't seem to influence the level of decay that you get on the fungicides. Tom, is it a mode of action susceptibility thing, or is it a, you know, placement? You can't get to the target. I mean, namely the target being the seed inside the pod, or do we know that yet?
I don't think we know that. And I think a lot of that is if the environment's going to go to pot and it's going to end up with a situation where you're going to have a scenario where seed quality could be as bad as it was in 2009 or as bad as it is this year, you can't do anything about that. I think really I would sit here and say put the combine in the field and cut them as fast as you can, but we all know this year in particular we ended up with a scenario where we planted so much of the crop in a very short, narrow window, and that really kind of caused some issues then when it came to trying to get things out of the field.
So, Tom, most of the fungicides, right, are systemic?
Some are systemic, some are not.
So when we...
But that level of systemic activity is typically very local.
Right. So I guess what I'm saying is when we wouldn't think that a fungicide would help anything when that soybean is separated from pod wall out there and the plant's dead. You know, how can we protect that, right?
I don't think you can with a fungicide.
And that's kind of where I was getting at, to that
absolutely,
point.
Absolutely, because you're...
That plant is physiologically mature. It can't do anything else, right? It's just set there.
That's right. It's not going to take that product up as it would if it, A, had leaves on it, and B, the soybean hadn't separated from the pod wall, plus then you could get into a situation where it's a physics problem. You're flying a fungicide on from one specific plane, and you're attempting to get the product onto a completely different plane of the plant.
You're not meaning aeroplane.
No,
I'm
meaning plane of... You're going at a 90-degree angle, driving across the top of the crop to try to get something at a different 90-degree angle.
So you're talking about the difference between you're driving horizontal and you're spraying vertically.
You're trying to get something onto a vertical part of the plant from a horizontal placement.
So the varieties, I mean, we talked about the fungicides in a little bit more in depth. So just to go a little bit more into the varieties, Tom, on the locations with your OVT where you did have, you know, an adequate amount of seed quality issues to evaluate, are there consistent differences in the varieties? I mean, is there a group that shows out more, either with more decay or less decay, or is it just a shotgun?
I don't think you can make that broad a statement about the set of varieties that were out there this year in that OVT. So it would have been nice to have been able to say, well, the maturity group 4 earlies appeared to have less decay. You can't make that broad a statement.
Well, so then, all right, a single variety, and, you know, you don't have to name a variety, but if there is there one or two or three, you know, whether similar maturity or not, that have consistently shown out either good or bad?
I would say there were 6 or 8 in that we looked at, and that's just from memory that looked pretty good. And when I say pretty good, they were ones on a 0 to 9 scale for purple seed stain, and then of what we considered just the overall total damage category, which would have been phomopsis, purple seed stain, and everything that was in there. Now, in the preliminary analysis that we've done, we looked at just kind of a standard evaluation number based on number of days in the field beyond physiological maturity that we calculated based on planting date and what the Arkansas spreadsheet soy map could provide us for date to kind of get an idea. We looked at relative maturity differences. We looked at any of the coloration or characteristics of the plant, pod hilum color, pod color, and pubescence color. There were no trends that would suggest that one of those would be not necessarily a controlling factor, but that something would correlate towards a seed quality issue.
So what I hear you saying is that red bean don't stand better in the field than a gray bean.
Not based on that location, no.
Wow.
And that's one of the, I mean, that was the wow moment. Absolutely. I mean, to steal Bobby's word there for a moment, but that was, you know, and the other thing, I put some pictures on Twitter a few weeks ago, and there were some comments that, oh, well, the difference is indeterminate versus determinate. Within that OVT set, there are so many varieties that have a determinant growth habit that there were no appreciable differences that you could make between those particular varieties that have that specific growth habit.
Tom, working on this problem, you know, doing research to try to, I don't know if you can solve it, but to at least, you know, help with it. I mean, it's got to be incredibly frustrating because, I mean, how many years out of 5 is this a subject that you can actually go get some data on?
Almost none. I mean, you could put trials out to do that particular type of research and not end up with something in the field.
I mean, it either happens or it doesn't, right?
That's exactly right. And then we've even had a large project that the Soybean Promotion Board has funded with what we have loosely called rainout shelters, and we do irrigation within those. And I'd have to look at the numbers, but I mean, they'd be ludicrous numbers even if I looked at them. So I don't think I'll be far off. In 2017, I think we irrigated overhead irrigation those plots like well over 700 hours, and didn't end up with that much appreciable seed rot. So it's one of those situations that I think you can do everything that you need to try to do to satisfy that specific research objective. And your final result, which would be seed rot or managing or reducing that seed rot, you might not end up with something within the environment that you're trying to create for that particular entity to occur.
To me, that means that this is almost a perfect storm of circumstances.
I mean,
you talk about your disease triangle or disease pyramid, but there's a lot more to this particular phenomenon than...
It's not just moisture.
Yeah.
No, and I think it could be, you know, driving up and down the road, I do a lot of jotting notes down. You have plenty of time to think about things.
That's not safe, Tom.
All of us in extension do that when it comes to...
No, not all of us.
Solve
not, no,
hardcore
no,
problems.
No, no, no.
Not
we
all
don't,
of us.
I don't jot down notes while driving down a road 60 miles an hour. That
I
is only you.
I have a pad of paper next to me, and I'll jot a word down.
You should use the voice note on your phone.
I should. I'll take that under advisement at this point. But I think some of the things that I've come up in my mind, you know, hours of shade, because environment or that piece of the disease triangle or pyramid that encapsulates environment is not just temperature and rain and humidity. There are a whole host of additional categories that may influence that situation. Shade, daylight, humidity at the bottom of the plant versus humidity at the top of the plant. All of those things may factor into this, because even the questions I've gotten this year as people have been cutting parts of fields, as Bobby talked about, you know, just the upper 3 to 4 inches of the plant didn't look right to me, and that seems to be where we had more of a seed quality issue. I don't know what influences that. There were a lot of things that can influence that. That could have been new growth after a fungicide application.
So, Bobby, I think with everybody we've had on here this year, Tom included, 3 times, 4 times, however many times he's been on here, and then everyone
else. Said a four-peat earlier.
Four-peat. I think the biggest thing we've learned is that 2018 was an altogether challenging year.
So with that, guys, we're going to jump off here. We appreciate the bald pathologist coming on. Look him up on Twitter, because he tweets more than the rest of us. Tom, you got any parting shots or great conclusions to add before we get out of here?
I don't think so. No.
Tom's done talking, so we'll quit there. And if, like always, you got a question, give us a call.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.